You are listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Canada.
Hey kids,
look up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's dance off, bro. Me and you.
Hello and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm Dan Collins.
Hey there. This is Martin Bruda.
Chris Gilpin.
I'm Adam Bishop.
I'm Chris Ellis.
I'm the Hey Kids Comics Desperado.
I'm Batman.
Who's a villain in Captain Canuck? What does he do?
Taking our maple syrup, eh?
I'm gonna chuck my hockey puck in my beer bottle at you. Take off, you hoser.
Gwenpool. I mean, Spider-Gwen, the whole heat and stuff. This is gonna be worth a few bucks.
And nobody wanted it.
The biggest bane to my existence right now is Shield number 9.
When you're trying to come up with an offensive movie that you want to reclaim, it's time to segue into the next porn comic segment, Adam.
How can you not have seen Airplane? What are you guys, young?
I talked to him directly, so I got a mass order. So I have like a good 5-inch stack inside my comic box.
Right on.
That's below average.
Halt! Smash!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show. I am one of your hosts, Martin Bruda, and with me today are
Chris Ellis
and Tony White.
Yay! How's everybody doing today?
Good.
Good. Great.
Good. Good. Yeah, Tony and I were chatting there a little bit in the before the show started about some silly stuff and some goofy stuff and hotel discounts. And
nice.
I was going to show, I showed him my, I found, we went to, Adam and I went to BMV.
Okay.
In Toronto. Like they have three locations. We went to the Annex location and then the one in Dundas Square downtown. Mm-hmm. And I managed to find a couple of DC Digests, our Army at War, but in like beautiful condition.
Yeah, those are great.
And I honestly, I think they were, if I have to remember, $7.99 each, $10 each. Hmm. They weren't 11 or 12 bucks. So
no, that's good.
Nice.
Grabbed a couple I was missing and Adam grabbed some stuff. And I also managed to find while I was there a copy of and I was missing this. I have not volume 1, but I didn't have volume 2. The Silver Streak Archives from Dark Horse, reprinting the original Lev Gleason Silver Streak stuff.
Wasn't that Daredevil on the cover though?
Yeah. That's the this reprints Silver Streak issues 10 through 13, and I'm sure Daredevil was in it. The original Daredevil.
Yeah.
The
red and blue guy.
Yeah. And Lance Hale, whoever the heck Lance Hale is.
Oh, nice.
He's in it as well. And just coincidentally, on my desk, I do actually have my volume 1 of the Daredevil reprint as well. I'm not sure exactly where my number 1 of Silver Streak is. It's not on my bookshelf, so it must be in one of the 4 piles of books that are like ready to become a workbench.
Waiting to sort?
Yeah, 4 legs of a workbench. They're just going to look like a hoarder place back there.
I feel that.
Yeah. So what did everybody do this week? Anything cool and exciting?
I didn't go on a trip. I didn't get lots of free rum over the week. No.
Yeah. It was a lovely week in sunny Cuba. Actually, it was 2 weeks. Not quite. We left last Wednesday, and we were supposed to be home this Wednesday, but a snowstorm in Toronto delayed it a day, so we got to spend an extra day in the at the beautiful resort.
It
was tough to take, you know. I think Sunwing, we went with them, and I think they were panicked that people would complain if we got left at the airport for a long time or overnight or something. So yeah. They just canceled they didn't cancel it, but they postponed it to the next day. And we got to stay at the resort for an extra day at no extra charge to us. So that was that was nice. Yeah.
I remember we got the one trip we did to Cayo Coco. There was a big snowstorm in Toronto. And of course, it's just one flight from Toronto to Cuba, dropping off the new people. And then from Cuba back to Toronto with us. And so we were waiting for them to even leave Toronto, let alone get there. So we're in the airport. And I'm actually getting text messages from my buddy in Hamilton on updates and stuff. And I knew more than the airport did on what was happening. He's like, no, yeah. Dude, they haven't even left the gate yet. I'm like, how do you know? Well, I drove up there and I'm standing there and I'm like, what? You did what?
Yeah.
Yeah. So but, he was standing there looking at the plane physically. He's like, dude, it hasn't even left yet. Like, how the hell do you know? I'm looking right at it. That's how delayed we were.
Oh, that's frustrating.
It was all right. Yeah. Did you manage to get into Havana and check out some of the comic shops, or did you just
no,
just Havana, on the resort?
Yeah, Havana was too far away. We were in Keokuku. Yeah. So there's not a whole lot happening there. It's pretty much strictly just touristy stuff. We hit a couple markets, and I'm like, why do they never have any comic book stuff here at all? Like, there's really nothing for people who don't want trinkety garbage. Like, if you don't want a magnet or a bracelet, like, there's no point in going.
I got some kind of carved piece of sea wood that I'm looking at over here. Mm-hmm. One's a hand that's going like this, the other one's a skull, the other one's like an octopus. I'm like, yeah, those are my three trinkets from my trips to Cuba.
Yeah, that's it's, I don't know, I would be more appreciative of like being able to, you know, pick up a Spanish comic book or you know, just something that belongs there, or even like, I'm assuming that they wouldn't get Marvel and DC and stuff there, so even if they had their own books, that would be like, you know.
Yeah, well, when I was there once, we ended up in Havana, and there was calling it a comic shop is a bit generous. It was like a room mm-hmm. in a building that was kind of on the second floor of what could have been possibly a government office building, you know. And he had some comics there, and a lot of stuff from Mexico, like the Spanish Spanish comics, and just a few smatterings of like some, you know, late 90s Amazing Spider-Mans and stuff like this. Obviously, you know, somebody mailed him a package from me or something like this with some books here.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to chat with them about it. And like, they don't have any publishers whatsoever for that sort of stuff.
No.
So they just sometimes get the Spanish language books out of. Now, this is years ago, 2008, 2009. So.
Yeah. But wherever I go, I always try to find a comic book shop of some sort. And typically I find nothing. There was in Key West, we were on a cruise. We were in Key West, and this guy had a couple of short boxes of comics that he was selling. And it was like a kid's kind of candy store. And they had like ropes and stuff along the ceiling, so kids could like climb up there and, you know, have, I don't know. It was like a playland on the second floor. And, yeah, and so he had a couple of boxes of comic books, so I like, you know, just leaf through them. But in all of the travels that I've done, which is not super extensive, but nothing, like, just
way back my mom and dad and my younger sister, she's 12 years younger than I, were going to Disneyland Epcot Center. Mm-hmm. And I had found myself unemployed at the time. So they're like, well, I tell you what, if you promise to drive half the way, then, you know, I'll buy you your food and shit like this, but I'm not paying for your booze. So, and I'm like, eh, well, whatever. So I hopped in and went down with them. And this is when the Blue Jays won the World Series.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I had a whole bunch of the McDonald's sets of the McDonald's trading cards that they had. Mm-hmm. So I figure, I mean, baseball hungry America, I'm sure I can peddle these World Series champion cards that are kind of rare and only available in Canada. No, nobody wanted them. No.
Blue Jays?
No.
Blue Jays who?
No, I'm like, this is like a rare set. Like, it's from McDonald's in Canada. You can't get it. No, nobody wants no Blue Jays here. Like, all right, whatever. Get aggressive on me.
Yeah, he probably wasn't wrong.
Yeah, that was in Fort Myers.
Okay. Yeah,
I remember I was in Fort Myers, and I was actually wearing an army ball cap with a U.S. lieutenant's bar on it that I got in a trade from somebody who didn't exchange. He got my Canadian Forces rank badges, and I got his ball cap with thing, and I used to just wear it, you know, just as a ball cap. And we were sitting in these cottages on in Fort Myers, and there's a bunch of guys in the cottage next to us, and they're like, "Sir," and I'm like, "Hey, just be gentle with that. I'm a cadet instructor. Like, let's not get too crazy here, right? Mm-hmm. Before I get accused of like stolen valor or something like that." Mm-hmm. But ended up hanging out with them for a little while for the week that we were on the beach, mm-hmm. and I'm like, "Okay, Dad, I'm gonna go get some beer." And you know, Canada, right? Can't remember what a 2-4 beer was at the time, but I put whatever it was, $20, $36, $40, whatever the price was at the time. I put that in my pocket. I went there, came back with like 4 2-4s of cans. And I was just like, ah! My dad's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, I expected to spend that much, and this is how much they gave me. It was kind of nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I can remember being in New York and buying, Budweiser at the 7-Eleven, and I swear it was 99 cents, and it was a tall boy.
Yeah.
So I bought one of those, a Coors Light, and I think it was a Pabst. They're all like 99 cents. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Now, granted, you need 7 of them to equal 1 real beer, but I mean...
And they're cold too, right?
Tasted different though. They really did taste different. Not that I drink a lot of at the time I was drinking all kinds of different type beers and stuff, but they tasted way different down there. I don't know what's the water they use or the difference in the alcohol content.
There is a scientific explanation for it. It had to do with the war, and they stopped using a lot of grains and hops in their beers, and people just got used to it. So when they war ended and they could put more grains and more hops back into the recipes, they stuck with the lighter recipes. Same thing with chocolate. I guess at some point in time, somebody in the States put some kind of a additive to the milk in the chocolate that gives it that little bit of a bitter American chocolate taste versus like European chocolate. And they used to give it to the GIs and stuff like this. When the GIs came back, they just preferred that taste to chocolate. So that's why Hershey's is kind of almost tastes to me anyways, and I don't want to be a jerk about it, but to me it tastes a little rancid versus a Cadbury cream egg. And so I'm not a big fan of American beer or American chocolate. I don't know.
And there go our American listeners.
Yeah.
All one of them.
There's lots of great things in America. I just prefer Canadian candy bars.
Listen, if you're Canadian and if you're an American and listening to this Canadian podcast, tell us what your favorite chocolate and beer is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wherever you can find us.
I think the worst one I've ever had was it Michelob Ultra Light? It was the first time I ever saw a beer in an aluminum can shaped bottle, like a can shaped as a bottle.
Oh yeah. That was they used to do those cruise ships.
Yeah. That's where I tasted on a cruise ship. And I was just like,
did it have the screw top?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember those.
And I'm like, what is this? This is not Schooner. This isn't, this is not Moosehead. This is,
If I wanted water, I'd ask for water.
there's a joke there about having sex in a canoe, but I'm going to resist. Monty Python joke about sex in a canoe.
Uh-oh.
Oh, well. Oh, comic books.
Yeah, I mean, last weekend I went to a show that's a local show I went to a couple of months ago as well. I think it was October, and in October I did not do very well. I was in a corner with very little frontage on the actual show, and I sold some stuff, and I bought probably just as much as I sold, half as much at least. But this time I went and I got just one table. My kid was supposed to come with me and sell Pokemon cards that she's buying and sorting and, pricing up. And so she ditched me. And so I ended up going to the show by myself, and I had a table and I was bringing my stuff in. And a second trip I was of stuff I brought in, she's like, "Which two?" And they were like right by the door. I'm like, "Yeah, I can fill two tables." And then I like did very, very, very well.
Nice.
Like really, really well. I think the last time I might have sold just over $100. This time I sold like over 600.
There you go.
And nice. I bought some stuff too. Yeah, it was good. It was worth the. It's only open from like 4 hours, I think. It's open 4 or 5 hours, so it wasn't that long a time to be. well worth the time.
That's good.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I was very pleased. So I was like, can I have these two?
You think it was the traffic or just the time of year? Or?
I think like I was literally by the entrance. Like they came in, I was right there on the left-hand side. And I think it's a couple of different things. I think it was because I was able to spread my stuff out over more real estate instead of having it sort of stacked together in boxes. I was able to take like those oversized treasuries and like you know, put out some trades and stuff on the stuff just started to go. I got rid of a bunch of like $2 each, 3 for $5 comics. I got rid of half the treasuries I put out and probably a bunch of key issues. But yeah, it was a pretty good show. I'm doing it again. I asked for two tables. I asked for those ones. We'll see if that works. Then I should. I'll probably do that pretty regularly.
I think the best time I ever had selling trades, I actually brought my comic book spinner rack with me. And I had room beside my table beside it. I just had it full of trade paperbacks. I just had a sign at the top saying $5 each or $10 for hardcovers, and they flew off that rack. And everybody who walked in, you know, gave it a spin, and it was like a conversation piece.
Mine used to make that noise.
It went really well.
I'll bring it next time. I was going to bring it the first time I went there, and I was like, I just don't have the room with all the stuff I was bringing. And then this time, I probably could have put it in there.
Be prepared for a lot of people making offers on it for you.
Oh no,
those suckers are in demand. That's for sure.
They are rare. I'm trying to find another one now because Ed's looking one, and I've been looking for one for him. And you know, if I can find one that's a little nicer than mine, I would with the digests. You know, the little digest ones on the corner.
Yeah.
If I can find one of those at the same vintage I have with the digests on it, I'll grab that and resell mine. But I have yet to find one.
I got mine from the convenience store that was a convenience store / gas station / video place in Ennismore, just on the other side of the causeway. Chris probably knows what I'm talking about. And my sister was just really good friends with the family that owned it. And I just jokingly said to her one day, I'm like, ask them if they want to sell that comic book spinner rack, because they had the spinner rack with the magazines in the corner. The rack was kind of pushed over, and it was absolutely full of the exact same issue of X-Men Annual, polybagged. Just full of them, like 20, 25 copies or whatever like that, or 30 copies. I can't remember what it was. And that's the only thing that was on it. And it was there for years. Like they didn't sell those, like those issues were on there for. So I just kind of said to her, you know, next time you're in there, just, you know, on a lark, ask them how much for the spinner rack. Well, you know, a couple of weeks later, because she's got the chuda as well, the ADHD, so she forgot. But if, a little while later, she goes, you owe me $54. I'm like, what do I owe you $54 for? Well, they said you could have the rack if you bought all the comic books, and the comic books came at $54 cover price. We looked up the comic book. It's not worth much. So we threw it out, but you can have the rack for $54. I'm like, done.
Wow.
And the funny thing is the annual that was on there, that's the one with, I can't remember the issue number or why it's special. It's the one with the weird X-Men. The guy's got like a really weird square cut and a patch, and he has like a pirate hook.
Oh, the cover's blue, right?
Oh, is that the first, what's his name? Executioner?
Maybe. Like, it's worth a few dollars now.
Because Marvel did a whole, their one year they did the annuals, and every annual was a creation of a new character. Like Amazing Spider-Man had Annex. I'm pretty sure the Uncanny X-Men was the Executioner.
I can't remember.
This one here, right? Also, I go on the right
direction. Yeah, that's the one.
Okay. That's not the one I was thinking of. That's the first appearance of, is that Rogue? Like
Days of Future Present.
Yeah, no, Rogue's earlier.
First appearance of Gambit.
Oh, that's Gambit.
Is it really?
Well, he's in debatable. Shadow.
Yeah.
It's Remy,
Gambit, Remy LeBeau, first appearance, according to the Marvel database wiki. But yeah, it was full of those.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I'm like, I don't know how much it goes for now, but I potentially had 20 or 30 of them come with my rack.
it says that it's commonly called the cameo, a first cameo of Gambit, but he appears in 15 panels with at least 10 instances of dialogue. That's full appearance.
I don't even want to get into that crap. Like you said, 15 panels with dialogue. Like, come on, that's not a cameo.
A full page and a half interaction with Storm, where she addresses him by name and refers to him as a thief. That's a full appearance.
Right? Now, the Marvel Wiki does say first appearance. It doesn't say anything else here, but first appearance, X-Men Annual 14 cameo, note one, and then Uncanny X-Men 266 full appearance, August of the same year.
See that should be cover appearance, right? Because he's on the cover of the 266. But
yeah, which one's more valuable?
266.
I'm glad I got two of those then. That's the real first appearance.
While set chronologically after Uncanny X-Men 266, it was published before said issue. I don't know. I mean, this is silly stuff. Like you said, how many panels does it take to not be a cameo? Like, the whole idea of the cameo was Stan Lee used to tease, like, Mary Jane Watson, her very first appearance in cameo, it's just a shadow of her head, you know, that kind of idea. Mm-hmm. And he did that constantly with all sorts of stuff, like, you know, like the old serial mentality of leave him on a cliffhanger at the end of the issue, right? So like Wolverine in Hulk 180, just the last panel, oh, I'm coming in the next issue, and then the next issue is all Wolverine, and then the third issue is like, oh, we got to tie this up real quick in a panel and move on to the next adventure.
Yeah,
and there's another cliffhanger at the end of the book, but it's like, man. First car across the line wins the Daytona 500. It's not the first tire, and then the first bumper, and then the first steering wheel, and then the first rear tire.
But
and
see,
then the
I
first
kinda,
time the whole car's over the line.
I kind of see it as a cameo if you see the character, but there's no name spoken, no words spoken. That's a cameo.
Yeah,
if he's on a screen and he's talking, that's a cameo. Like, as long as it's not like he's on a screen talking for, and that's, you know, he's like MODOK or something, but, you know, like he has, or not MODOK, but the other guy with the screen on his belly.
Armin Zola. Yeah.
Zola. Yeah. But I mean, like, if he's on a screen and he says something, that's a cameo. You haven't seen him in person, in quotes, but you know, like that's a cameo. If he's in 15 pages of your book, that's a full appearance.
Yeah.
Right.
I would agree with that.
Even if he's in one big splash panel and he's talking and someone says his name and he's in costume, that's a full appearance too.
Right. Yeah. It gets a little sketchy because chronologically it does happen after the other issue, but it just happened to be released a few months earlier because, you know, delays and some of this. I get it, sort of, but my gosh, I mean, just any excuse to try to soak some kid on a book, you know, like I don't even want to. I can't find it, but I'm trying to find what was the highest price paid for a Dark Hawk number one, 9.8. And I think it was like $900, if I'm not mistaken, US. Wow. Somebody is sitting there, you know, even if it's $500 US, somebody is sitting there with a $500 copy because somebody saw a shot of Sylvester Stallone in what are the Reavers? No, what are the, what's
wasn't
the
it Reavers?
It's the club called in Guardians of the Galaxy, the Ravagers, the Reavers.
Ravagers, I think.
Ravagers in Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. So they saw like a really blurry picture of him in a Ravagers uniform, and they're like, "That's Darkhawk." No.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he's going to be in the new TV show. He's going to be in the new movie. So Darkhawk went nuts, right? First appearance.
I think even more than that, they released a toy. Dark Hawk, and it said Guardians of the Galaxy on it. So I think then people saw, you know, Sylvester Stallone and started thinking that he was going to be Dark Hawk for some reason.
Yeah, exactly.
And those people would have never read a Dark Hawk comic book.
Right.
Like, he's a teenager.
Like, I'm not dissing on Sylvester Stallone. You know, I'm not dissing on Dark Hawk. He might be a perfectly great character and it might be a fantastic comic book, but whoever bought that issue, bought it to flip it later and make money and send his kid to college. And how many times have we seen that bite people in the butt?
Like all the time.
You know, all the time. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy, especially right now with like, even still, like I know some prices have dropped, but I do not know why. For some dumb reason, I've decided and put it in my head that I now need a complete run of G.I. Joe comics from Marvel.
Oh,
Martin. And holy, the prices on some of these go bad boys.
What is going on? Save your money, man. Save your money.
What is going on?
So expensive.
Why has it jumped up in price so tremendously in the last 10 years?
Honestly, I think part of it is simply it's Bronze Age. And like the books now are almost 40 years old. And so to find them and to find them in high grade is rare. And it's pushed the price way up on stuff. And then like the higher books, like as soon as you get over like, oh, I don't know, like 130-ish, then they really start to climb up too. So the first probably, I'm going to say 21 issues, because 21 is the silent issue, which is the first appearance of Storm Shadow, I think. So once you get those 21 books out, like you're paying, you know, minimum $16 a book probably for some of the non-important, non-key issue ones. And once you get into like the 150s, now you're paying almost $100 a book.
Yeah, I know. Like even issue number one, I mean, there were millions of copies of number one published because it was so cross promoted all over the place. There's a guy on here with a high grade Marvel number one direct edition, $150 Canadian.
Yeah.
Like even number one is through the it's nuts. Why?
You can be up $250 for one of those, not even slabbed. And like the issue 21 is a $200 book in really high grade.
Yeah.
Not even slabbed. I mean, these are expensive books.
I know. Now I do have my original G.I. Joe number one. It's not in the nicest shape because this was before I started, you know, collecting comics. I was reading them. But it's just bonkers. It's just stupid. And of course, you know, in typical Martin Brutus style, how many, where am I here? Hold on, G.I. Joe. Let me pull this crap up. What did I do? I have 20 issues so far.
Okay.
Issue one, that's mine. I got 4, 5, 7, 9, 13, 36, 41. And it goes up from there.
Oh, nice.
I have issue 115. So I don't know. I mean, this is not a good idea.
I would recommend buying the trades.
Those are expensive.
Just strictly for the pricing on them. Like, I mean, you'll save in the long run. Because I've got issue 1 through 151 and then 155. So I'm missing 152, 153, and 154. But those last three books are going to cost me $300 probably.
Yeah,
or more, just to like finish those off. And then I was going through my books, like going through to reorganize them, going through everything, pulling them out, and realized that a bunch of the books that I had were second prints, not first prints. So I'm a sucker. I got to get the first print. So I got to buy 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have to replace 7 books to get the reprints. But some of them are kind of costly now because, like 11 is the first appearance of Destro, so you know that starts to get a bit expensive. As you know, again, it's probably not like super expensive, but I think it's like a $40 or $50 book now.
Sorry, which issue?
11.
11 is the first appearance of Destro.
I think so.
Yeah, I don't have 11 yet.
Oh, sorry. First cameo of Destro. First appearance of Doc Gung-Ho, Airborne, and Snow Job.
Jeez Louise.
I've got one of those. I don't know if I have another one, but I have a couple of. Yeah.
Like I'm looking here on the Flea Bay, and this guy has issues 1 through 155.
Yeah.
And it says here that issue 154 is coverless, so it doesn't have the cover. Everything is average of the collection is fine. This amazing collection contains newsstand variants, price variants, and low print issues. $4,064 Canadian.
Wow.
No, that's his asking price, and he's got 8 offers. I don't know whether they're realistic offers or not, but that's his asking price. And yeah, shipping is $188.94 Canadian.
Not even included.
Not even included.
Wow.
Like this is going to be, I'm going to try really hard to make this one of those, like the one issue I found at the Nostalgic Journey Antique Mall for $5, mm-hmm. you know, and a couple of the other books I got at, Comic Alley Toys had a sale.
Yeah.
Half price sale on their front bin book. So it had $6 each copy and I got them for $3 each.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm going to try to do is, you know, stay the heck away from paying premium prices and see how well I do and turn it into a 5-10 year project to try to poke away at these. But
yeah,
not smart. But the hardcovers, like you were saying, like IDW reprinted all of these books in hard and then reprinted them all in soft as well. And I actually have Volume 1 printed by Marvel and Volume 1 printed by IDW.
Okay.
Same cover, but different trade dress and the quality of the paper is different. I put one of them on my shelf and the other one in a box, and I may have turned around and sold it in my clearing out before I moved. So somebody got it for like $5, and I think it's like a $65 Canadian trade right now.
Ouch.
So I don't know. I got to go through my trade boxes before the comic convention on Sunday. I'm supposed to sell that.
Oh, you're selling this Sunday, are you?
In theory, I've had a crap week and I just did not get organized in time. So if I can get organized tonight and tomorrow, then I'll go nuts. But if not,
you can do it on site. I mean, drag in what you don't get done and just sit behind your table and do that work while you're sitting there if it's a little bit slow.
So we'll see how it goes. Ooh, somebody's got a issue number 2, fine, starting bid, $350. Two people have bid on it, and condition acceptable. Oh, what's wrong with it?
Everything.
Reader copy.
Oh, never mind. I take it all. Well, it's not that. No, it's bad. No, it's bad. First appearance of Destro, G.I. Joe Real American Hero 14, $40 Canadian. I can buy it now, right now. I have this one. No, I don't. Do I? Ooh.
14?
No, I don't have 14. Apparently number 20 is drawn by Todd McFarlane, or was it number 50? One of them was drawn by Todd McFarlane. It was a little bit more than the other ones.
He also did the G.I. Joe special.
Yeah. Issue 60, first appearance of Lieutenant Falcon, first appearance of Chuckles, first appearance of Fast Draw, Law and Order, Iceberg, Monkey Ranch, Zanzibar, and Ice Viper, and penciled by Todd McFarlane.
Oh, nice.
That one cost me $15.
Yeah.
In the half price sale. So they're not going to be good.
No.
Dumb idea. This is stupid.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on Marketplace and look for people selling like just stacks of comics with G.I. Joe's in them. You might be able to get
I do have my Breaker, my Ram Cycle.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, I did that to complete a lot of my run. Some guy, it was actually in Ottawa, and he was selling like, I don't know, he had a stack of them. Ooh, nice. And he had, I can't even remember what all the books were, but he wanted like $50 for them. So I bought them, and then I said, I'll take them. And then like 10 minutes later, he messages me back and says, somebody offered me $100 for them. And I'm like, okay, well, we had a deal, like you're gonna sell them to me, right? And so then he's like, well, I'm gonna take the $100. And I'm like, okay, whatever, take the $100. About I don't know, the next day he sends me a message back. He's like, will you still take them for the $50? And I'm like, should I try and lower the price now?
40.
because I know that the other guy didn't want them for whatever reason. This other guy didn't want them, or just was trying to run the price up to see if I would pay more. But anyways, I said, okay, well, I'll give you the same. I'll give you your asking price. So I ended up getting them.
Yeah, let me come take a look at them. Why didn't this guy take them?
That's
what's wrong with them?
I'll come take a look at them for sure if they're worth the $50.
To me, they were worth the 50. Like there was, I don't know, there was about 70 issues or something. So, I mean, it was a fairly heavy chunk of the run. So I was like, well, even at $1 an issue, like whatever, I can. What are you looking at, Martin? I saw your face, your jaw drop there.
G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, number one, CGC 9.4 newsstand.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Buy it now price.
$99.
$977.46 Canadian.
$1,000.
You should get that one.
Holy lifting.
Yeah.
Holy boy.
He gets that. Those 9.8s are going to skyrocket.
Holy lifting.
They probably already have.
Issue 155. Graded 9.0, $500 by it now.
Oh yeah, that I mean that's not uncommon for that issue.
Oh, this is not a good idea. Maybe I should just put my pirate patch on, find my parrot, load up my tablet. Have we heard anything about who's got the rights to them yet? Because IDW lost the rights, right?
Yes. As far as I know, right now. I think Dynamite was supposed to get them. That was originally kind of the, you know, under the shoulder talk, you know, people were saying that they were the ones that were going to get them. But honestly, at this point, I have no idea. I've been waiting to see it in previews and have seen nothing.
Cause I'm wondering if whoever gets them is going to release like an omnibus or something like that. They'd be silly not to. I mean, that thing would sell like gangbusters.
Yeah, I just wonder if, like, because Marvel, do they own the rights to the books that they published, or does Hasbro still own the rights, or yeah. How does that even work?
With G.I. Joe, Hasbro maintained full rights.
Okay.
So IDW, when they reprinted the Marvel issues,
yeah. Just
reprinted them. Okay. You know, like, I don't think there were any issues missing and stuff like this. Like, sometimes there is, like, these weird funky things, like Micronauts, for example. Not all the characters in the Micronauts comic book were owned by Mego Corp. Mm-hmm. Some of them were actually created by Marvel. So that's why you can see Bug in Marvel comics, even though he's a Micronaut, but Hasbro doesn't own Bug because it was created by Microsoft for the comics. Yeah. In this case, Hasbro has full rights. So yeah, it'll be interesting to find out. Cause like IDW just reprinted all the Marvel books, you know, and then carried on the series with Larry Hama.
Yeah.
And called it G.I. Joe, a Real American Hero. And so I'm hopeful maybe we'll see an omnibus, maybe including even the Marvel Comics and the IDW.
That would be good. I would like to see them keep Larry Hama too, because I mean, this is really his vision right from issue number one. So it doesn't make sense at this point to try and bring in new blood like Josh Blaylock and I remember the other guys. But they rebooted it for Devil's Due Publisher.
Yeah.
And they did a pretty good job of it. They called it a Real American Hero. It was all, you know, it was the same, but it just wasn't the same. Like, they didn't try and continue it. But when IDW took over, literally they had 150-ish. The first issue was 155 and a half. And then it was just like, what happened? And then the next day kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so it took off right from there.
Now they did do their own little reboots too of because there is like sort of a classic G.I. Joe from IDW and then a modern G.I. Joe from IDW.
Yeah.
But yeah, like having those classic issues would be great. But how many volumes is the trade paperbacks now?
Of trades, I have no idea. I didn't buy a single one. I have all the regular issues.
Yeah.
Because I'm a sucker.
I mean, it's gotta be. Oh, yeah, I just found it. 21. There's 21 trade paperbacks from IDW for the original series and the continuation.
And the continuation. Yeah, that makes
Holy. Sense. That's going to be steep too.
Yeah.
Especially when they're out of print.
Oh, they're out of print now?
Well,
I guess because IDW doesn't have them anymore either, right? So they kind of given up the ability to reprint them. Yeah, I don't know what Hasbro was thinking when they pulled it from IDW or what their thought was, or like, is it going back to Marvel or who the heck knows? But as long as they bring Larry Hama with whoever picks it up, that's just the intelligent thing to do. But sometimes comic companies aren't known for the intelligent thing to do.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, they had G.I. Joe, the complete collection in hardcover. So there's a series of hardcovers too, but yeah, not available. Sold out.
And really expensive.
Really expensive. 2012. That's not it's 11 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Time flies when you're having fun.
Feel old now.
Yeah.
The Rise of Serpentor, that's available though, as a hardcover, $57 from Amazon.
Yeah.
Anyways. yeah, it'll be interesting. We'll see how that goes.
Be pretty interesting if Warner Brothers.
Well, somebody, like, I'm sure the rights are going somewhere. Like, the, for sure that this is, you know, this is a big property for Hasbro, you know, and I'm sure somebody somewhere is getting this, this contract, so to speak. And it's just a waiting game to see when the ink is dry on the contract and the way we go.
Yeah. But see, now there's even more at stake for a company like Marvel or DC to get them. I mean, now you're talking like movies, right? So it's not only the comic book property that they would be trying to license. They would try to license the movies as well. And I know that they didn't do super well, with the first two, you know, with Channing Tatum and then The Rock. And then I kind of enjoyed, personally, I enjoyed the Snake Eyes movie myself. But I don't think it did overly well in the theater. So I wonder who did that. Who did that? Skydance, MGM.
Keep meaning to watch.
And Paramount.
Yeah, Paramount.
Yeah,
I didn't mind it, but apparently all the guys on like the Hiss Tank forum, because I'm back on that sort of stuff, they hated it.
Yeah. Well, I think the problem, well, there, I think there's two problems with it. One, they kind of went against the already established Snake Eyes. So from, you know, like they did a little bit of his origin in the G.I. Joe movie, the first one, and then kind of just, you know, ignored that and then kind of did another origin on top of it, but it kind of didn't really make sense. And that, so the purists, I guess, were annoyed that it didn't follow like the traditional Snake Eyes story. And I think people were also upset that Snake Eyes was Asian. Larry Hama said that he always wished that Snake Eyes was Asian, because he's like, it's really not fair that the only Asian in all of G.I. Joe dumb is a bad guy.
Yeah.
Was Storm Shadow. So he was always kind of like, you know, I wish I'd have made him white or made him Asian instead of white. And, you know, like, as like, you know, a half Asian, half Hawaiian guy himself, you know, he's like, you know, but that was the pressure he was on when he was writing this stuff, probably in the, you know, in the early 80s, right?
Yeah. Yeah. This is bananas. I'm just like falling down a rabbit hole here looking at prices. This is just
don't do it.
Unbelievable.
Don't do it. It's this, like, if somebody
crazy,
if somebody told me they were going to start collecting Spawn, I would say, don't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't do it.
$221 for a fine plus 6.5, 155. $244, $275. You're not getting issue 155 for less than $200 bucks.
No.
Oh
no.
My goodness.
And if you do, it's either going to be beat up or somebody at a flea market is not going to have any idea what it is.
Exactly. That's my only goal. That's my only hope.
Like, I don't know. I managed to get mine. I found this guy and he was selling some comic books. He was from the States. Now this is going back a ways, but I got G.I. Joe 155. I got Tomb of Dracula number 10, which is, you know, the first appearance of Blade. I got War Machine, the cameo and the first appearance. So 281, 282. I got those two issues and New Mutants 98. And I think the whole package cost me like $85 or something ridiculous. Wow. Like that. But again, this is going back like, you know, a long time.
Yeah.
But it was a pretty stinking good deal.
Yeah. Yeah. This is nuts. Well, so we got this new and exciting, interesting in the wonderful world of, I did get a naughty comic book.
Uh-oh.
So our I don't know, fellow that we know, I'm not sure if it's like a full friend or not, but he posts on the Canadian forums and stuff. His name's Dexter Cockburn and he does adult comic books. So he had this one photo cover and I'm like, I'll give it a try. You know, it's interesting enough. So I ordered it in, $5, a few dollars shipping. A photocopy 8.5 by 11 shows up at the door with like the printer. With the printer trim.
Put like, a sticky note over her.
Yeah, yeah.
She's actually nude, right? On the cover.
Yeah.
Oh, is she? Oh, I didn't think it was on the cover. I thought it was just like, okay, I missed it.
So it's an adult comic book, but it's satire. It's goofy. It's like the old Underground, you know, Robert Crumb stuff. You know, it's silly stuff. Pippi. Oh, yeah, I kind of blocked that word out too. Pippi Long Effer is the name of the one character in the book. As I'm sure that on the ad, like if I actually read it, it would say that it's, you know, 8.5 by 8.5 by five and a half. I would have been like, oh, it's just like home printed. But I was a little surprised that it showed up. It was like a little mini Tijuana Bible instead of a full comic. I was like, oh.
Also, the reason it was $5.
Well, $5 is a pretty normal price for a comic book.
At a store, usually with Kickstarters or that sort of thing, it's
yeah, that's fair. But it was I haven't read it yet, but I thought I'd show it to Adam tomorrow at work, except we're not working tomorrow. yeah
well, he should have been here. He'd be going crazy over that thing.
Thought he was gonna be here.
That was one thing. It was kind of funny, we found like I'm a bit of a sucker for the old Aircell comics, right? The Canadian air conditioning company, where the son goes, Dad, can I run a comic book publisher out of the back? And Dad goes, yeah, sure. So they did a Debbie Does Dallas comic. So we're at Comic Alley Toys, and they've known Adam for years for him going and looking for, you know, the more adult type books. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, Aircell, Marty likes Aircell. Show Marty that one, because I guess it was issue 8 or something like this. He didn't want it because it wasn't, you know, an earlier issue. So I'm like, oh, cool, Aircell, I'll take it. So we had this big conversation. He's like, yeah, Adam knows where the two boxes of adult comic books are in the back. You go right ahead and take a look in there if you want to look at other ones. I'm like, yeah, I figured Adam would know where they are. Yeah, it should be nice. Fun.
I think I have that trade. I think there's a trade.
Could be.
I think I have it. Yeah, it came in a collection I bought once. It might be on one of my shelves.
Yeah, could be.
I can almost picture it. I think I know where it is on my shelf.
Yeah, like I brought the issue home and it's here somewhere. I haven't read it yet, but I'm sure I'm going to be lost being issue 8. But you know, I just can't say no to like cheap flea market, antique shop, Gold Key issues and you know, strange independents like Aircell and stuff like this. And it's just fun. It's a goofy read. And
I think they're worth a little bit too. I think the trade itself is an expense. It's a fairly pricey trade to get. Cause I vaguely remember saying, "Oh, I'll keep that."
Yeah. I'm sure that they are. You know, in a regular comic shop and stuff, because they are hard to find.
It is Aircell that did Men in Black, right?
Yeah. The first Aircell was the first Men in Black series with Aircell. Now, Aircell was later bought by Malibu. So there's Aircell, fully Canadian Aircell. Then there's Aircell as a subprint of Malibu. And then Aircell changes their name fully and gets completely swallowed up by Malibu. And then Marvel buys Malibu. So I don't know how the rights went. Some of that stuff was creator independent, creator owned. So I don't think I've seen Marvel do anything with those Malibu characters, have they?
No, actually, I was just going to say that, like Prime and Rune, and they just when they shut down Malibu, they just defuncted all those characters. I'm sort of half surprised. I mean, like Prime, if written, you know, today, could be done like more as Superman rather than a knockoff, you know what I mean? Like it was kind of a cheesy book when Malibu had it, but Rune was fun. I liked Rune. He was like a ancient vampire.
Yeah, they could have done something with it. I don't know. One thing that I was going to cover later, but I might as well do it here on the show since we've got 5 minutes, unless you guys have something else. No. Superman #1 came out today.
Oh.
And okay, before all the Marvelites get all their panties in a bunch here, relax with the reboot stuff. And DC's always rebooting. Who's Daredevil right now? It's not Matt Murdock. You know, what was his name? Cho was Incredible Hulk for a while. Like, give me a break. Marvel does the same thing. They
they all do.
They just sometimes, like, you know, every time there's an event book, things kind of get changed. Now, this is a soft reboot. This isn't like New 52. This isn't like the Silver Age. You know, what has come before still counts and everything like this. But the dawn of DC is sort of the new, you know, hey, we've got our ownership under control. And so now we're going to like push forward instead of in this holding pattern where all they're doing is printing Batman comics. Mm-hmm. And this thing's fantastic. This thing's amazing. I mean, it is back to basic Superman, you know, Clark Kent, Lex Luthor, Lois Lane is spicy and sexy and sassy, and Jimmy Olsen's running around taking pictures of stupid stuff, and Lex Luthor's doing a whole bunch of weird stuff, Lex Luthor-y in the background, and Superman, it's fantastic. But like the first page and stuff, the credit page right afterwards, if you look at this and you don't immediately have the Superman 1977, well, 78, was it? Movie theme song going in your head when you open this page up. Like, look at that. do. Like, it's just, it's fantastic. The art is amazing. The writing's great. Like, I was really impressed. I'm not a huge Superman guy. I was a bigger Batman guy than Superman guy.
Yeah.
But who was it? Tomasi and somebody kind of had Superman for a little while there before they gave it to Michael Bendis. Brian Michael Bendis. And I loved it. It was great. It was like really good Superman. This is
before Bendis or after Bendis?
Before Bendis.
Peter J. Tomasi.
Yeah. Like that. There's Lois Lane there in charge of, she's the new editor in chief of the Daily Planet for a while. You know, it's this is classic Superman. This is just plain ordinary classic Superman. It's just fantastic. Like, if you're a Superman fan, I can't see how you don't love this book. So I'm going to write a review on that bad boy, because it's fun. If the rest of Dawn of DC is kind of like this, I'm in. I might actually have a pull list again.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Like, that's, they need to do that to grab people's attention. And, you know, I hate to be like, because they don't, again, you've said it like a million times before. They don't write comics for 40-year-old guys, you know. But they kind of should. I mean, they're going after dollars that the kids don't really want to spend.
Well, this thing is all ages. I mean, a kid can read this. Now, it could be because it's Superman. Superman is that, you know, blue Boy Scout kind of character where, you know, it's just clean adventures and stuff like this. And it kind of lends itself to it. Mm-hmm. You might not be able to do this with Batman, but this thing's, like, I can see this appealing to somebody who's a real traditional Superman fan and a casual reader who's just jumping on, if such a thing exists anymore. So it's good. It's really good. I'm excited to see what the rest, because they're going to have a new Titans book with the original new Teen Titans lineup. There's a Green Arrow book coming out. I'm hoping it's less TV show and more, you know, original Green Arrow.
Yeah.
Cyborg's getting a new titles coming out. A bunch of other books are getting sort of restarted and reinvigorated. And like I said, you know, for a little while there, they didn't even know whether DC was going to exist.
Yeah.
You know, the COVID and I understand that the offices, like, everybody lost their office. They were going to that hot desk thing that all the cool millennial type business people are going to, where it's you and your laptop and you just sit at the only desk that's available, and there's a phone there and there's your laptop, and, you know, you're using WebEx instead of a desk phone and stuff. And so, you know, more freelancing type stuff. So, you know, it took them a little while to get a plan in place now that the ownership's stable and stuff. And that's what this is, you know, as opposed to the aborted, 5G stuff that was sort of came out, but didn't.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they fired Dan Didio and that kind of killed the official initiative of 5G. But then, you know, they didn't know what else to do.
Yeah.
You know, or contracts were already signed. So they kind of shoehorned some of this in there that it didn't even fit properly.
Yeah.
Anyways, Superman, number one, I cannot recommend this highly enough if you are a Superman fan. But if you are, you probably already are.
Like, I was reading Deathstroke.
Yeah.
And it got really like strange and trippy, like the last little while. Like, it was almost like what can we do with this guy? So then they had him like become like, I don't know, he was almost like a god, and he like lived in this other realm, and he had like Black Canary working with him, and it was just like, it was, the whole thing was just kind of like straight up insane.
Well, I totally like, understand, you know, trying new things and
yeah,
see what happens and stuff like this. But some of the characters, like, this is Superman. You can't mess with Superman. You can't mess with Wonder Woman. You can't mess with Iron Man. You can't mess with Amazing Spider-Man. Like, you can play games with them for a little while, like the Superior Spider-Man. But eventually, you know, Peter's coming back.
Yeah.
You know, eventually, you know, Bruce Wayne, broken back or not, he's coming back.
Yeah.
So there's just some key core characters that have lasted for, you know, almost 100 years, 70 years, 50 years, depending on which character we're talking about here, that at its core, there's a certain set of characteristics that keep this character around.
Yeah.
Anyways, gents, that's all the time we have for this week. As always, hit heykidscomics.ca for all the back issues and your favorite podcasting stuff. We're all over the place. So let's see if we can get that American reader back and listener back, and maybe two of his friends, and see how it goes. All right. Have a good week.
You have been listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Ontario, and available as a downloadable podcast at www.heykidscomics.ca and at www.firstcomicsnews.com. Promotional consideration for the show was provided by no one. Are you kidding me? We couldn't get advertisers if we tried. Wardrobe for our hosts was provided by Joe Nerds in Whitby, Ontario. They don't know that fact, but that is where we get 90% of our clothes from. No animals were harmed in the making of this radio show. Marty tried, but allergies won't let him get too close to Sam's cats. The views and opinions expressed by Sam are solely his own and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the rest of the hosts, as we all like the Walking Dead TV show. The Hey Kids Comics Radio Show is a Quinn Martin production and copyright Hey Kids Comico. Rebroadcasting in part or in whole of this show is forbidden, but really, who would want to anyway?
Level check for Eugene Levy CFFF promo. Take three.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Good level?
Yep.
Bobby Bittman here. I always listen to Trent Radio 92.7. I love this guy. I really do.
You do one more of those?
Sure. What was wrong with that one?
Nothing. The level was a little high.
Okay. Hi, this is Bobby Bittman. When I'm in the Kawarthas, I listen to Trent Radio 92.7 FM.